Teach me your ways, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. Give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, an examination of Christian perspectives on thought, faith, and culture, featuring Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California, and the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Also in the studio with us today are Chris Holowaty and Tom Dunn. We've recently passed the 6 billion mark of people on the earth, and so there are more people alive on the earth today than there have ever been at one time. So our topic today, we'd like to talk about population pressures and the relevance of God's command to be fruitful and multiply. Tom, you suggested today's topic. Why was this on your mind?
Well, Bradley, initially it wasn't population pressures and, global food shortages and things like that. They got me thinking about this. It was more the idea that I've heard from the pulpit more than a few times, the idea that if you're a woman and you want to have babies, hey, that is from God and it's right and you should have them. That's every woman's God-given desire, and it's a desire to be given into, basically, a desire to be fulfilled. I partly disagree with that just at the get-go because for some people it's a pathology. You know, ooh, having babies, ooh, I want to have a baby, and it'll be so nice, and, you know, it'll coo in my arms, and they have this whole baby scenario that maybe isn't reality. And not that that should stop them from having children, but I think that that needs to be addressed before they have children, rather than just say, well, you know, that's from God, go, have them, as many as you want. And along with that, the whole idea of be fruitful and multiply and, focus on the family and the family and all these, you know, that's a Christian thing to do, is to have a family. And I mean, it's just like nobody challenges these things. People just kind of take it as a given that, yeah, that's a God thing, so go for it. And I guess it made me stop and think, well, with the population of the earth going out of control the way it is, and resources and food and things eventually going to run out. When I think about Paul addressing the Corinthian church and saying, because of the present problems that are happening in the Roman Empire, in your church, this, that, and the other thing, that people who have wives should be as though they had none, those who are, you know, part of this world as though they weren't part of it, I can't help but think that in some way that may apply to us as Americans in this world of 6 billion people. That, yeah, you may have the freedom to have babies, but should you have them? Yes, you have the freedom to get married, but should you? Yes, you have the freedom to buy Suburbans and possessions, but should you, seeing that there are millions of new cars on the road every month? As responsible Christians, how should we live? And I know that's kind of a broad way to address this, but that's kind of what got me thinking about this, is no, we don't necessarily have the right to have babies. Just because you feel like having a baby doesn't mean you should have one. Just because you feel like having a wife and a home and a white picket fence and a family, maybe that doesn't mean automatically that that's from God and that you should have one, just because James Dobson says that it's a godly thing. That's what kind of got me started on this, so I really am interested to hear what you guys have to say, particularly you, Bradley, because you're a father.
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is that in Scripture it does say that if you found a wife, you found a good thing. And, you know, through the Proverbs it talks about children being good. Also that it says in Scripture that there would be false teachers coming along forbidding marriage. That's what initially comes to my mind.
I'm glad you brought up that passage from Proverbs, you know, blesses the man who has a lot of kids, or, you know, the man whose quiver is full of kids. It's like arrows in the hand of a warrior. I hear that a lot from the pulpit too. Like, see, that means you should have a lot of kids. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Well, how many kids is too many? Does that mean you pump out 20 kids so that, you know, you can have a quiver full of kids and it's a good thing? I mean, it's just like, I'm just not buying it, you know? You know, it also says that he's put a sword in the hand of his chosen ones to execute vengeance on the nations. I mean, so does that mean I go slaughter my neighbor who's a pagan?
So let me ask you this. Should we opt for zero population growth? And who determines who has children and who doesn't?
No, that's a great question, Bradley. I mean, I mean, that's one of the problems that happened in fascist countries in ages past, is the dictator would say, this is the amount of kids you can have, or you're genetically not what I would think of as strong, so you can't have kids. I mean, that's incredibly problematic. And then we also have our Catholic brothers and sisters that say that contraceptives or birth control, or however you want to phrase it, is not from God. So what is the responsible Christian stance on this topic, you know? I mean, are we stewards of the planet? I mean, there could be that, we could bring up that whole angle at it. If we're stewards of the planet, then should America be using up 40% of the resources and only have, what is it, 10% of the population?
I mean, it sounds like what part of your question is, should it be up to somebody besides the individual to make these decisions? I mean, should it be a government board, or should it be a church board, you know, that says you can only have this many kids? Because to consider that everybody in the world is going to seek the voice of God on the subject and say, God, should I have children or not, is unrealistic. But as it pertains directly to the Christian, should the Christian go directly to God and say, should I have children? Should I have more than one? Should I use contraception? I don't know. How have I approached the matter? I mean, myself, I have one child now, and I'd like to have at least one more, but I'm not planning on having unlimited number of children until my body gives out. Part of my approach to it is, which is not always the best approach, is a pragmatic one. Thinking, you know, how much family can I actually sustain? Even though it's truly God that sustains my family, I know that there are those that say, well, you know, if I just keep having kids, God will provide for them. And that's just not the way that my wife and I are approaching it. So,
yeah, that's a good point. How many people ask themselves those questions? Lord, should I have kids? Lord, should I get married? Lord, should I even date? Or Lord, this is what I want. Is this from you? This desire to have these things. And I don't hear anyone raising a hand and saying, perhaps there's a different way. I'm hearing a lot from the pulpit, hey, gals, you want to have kids? That's from God. That's a God-given desire, and go for it.
Well, it does appear to be a mechanism within the woman that she desires to have children. And I think that it goes beyond a social pressure.
Well, I also have a mechanism that makes me want to, like, punch people in the face. But, I mean, do I give in to that? You know, I don't see in Scripture that God says, you know, to women, you know what, that's something I've placed in you, and I'm behind it 110%, except for the be fruitful and multiply Scripture.
Was there anything in Scripture that annulled that?
Good point. I don't know.
I think before we get too far into the discussion, we need at least to consider some of the grounding of the comments from Scripture about the blessing of children. We must keep in mind that Scripture was composed at a time when it was an agrarian society. That there weren't any sorts of contraceptives, any sorts of interventions like IUDs, those kinds of things. And so in many ways, we're dealing with an issue that must be addressed from inference and from parallel. So for example, the idea of children being a blessing and you're happy if your quiver is full of them, that means a number of things. It means, one, that you have enough kids to work the flocks in the fields, that now you have increased your wealth. It also means that you've survived to an old age. It also means that you have had enough food to eat through to your old age, and that plague and war and these other things have not swept through your family during your time. So, yes, children are the blessing of the Lord, and you're happy if your quiver is full of them, but that implies a number of other blessings that go with that. We're in a situation today where children are, in a pragmatic sense, a financial liability, not a financial asset. Again, we're talking broad mandates, be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over the earth. But that dominion would also imply responsibility that goes with that authority. And if we do have dominion over the earth, then we have the right to control its resources, and that would include its population. And yet we also have a broad mandate from Christ as Christians to love our neighbor as ourselves. And of course, the rejoinder to that was, who then is my neighbor? And I think that's very much at the issue of who is my neighbor and do I love him as much as myself? When we look across the face of the planet and the consumption of resources, there arises very quickly a tension of, do I utilize the resources of this planet to sustain me and my levels of pleasure, or do I act in custodianship for them for my neighbor? Because that's the rejoinder always. Well, these are, this is my dream, my kids, my house, my, and we very rarely take into consideration the fact that these resources might be needed for someone else's kids, someone else's house, someone else's stuff. See? And so it comes down to, will I fulfill myself or will I fulfill someone else? I don't think it's an issue of should we have kids or should we not. There seem to be sufficient resources on the planet to sustain the population. It's just that we tend to gather those resources inordinately towards certain centers for consumption. The question for Christians is not so much, do I have kids? But how much resource do I consume lavishing it upon my children when other children don't have medicine, food, or water? People who don't have access to contraceptives, people who don't have access to basic health education, and they're going to have kids. I mean, they are. Population pressure does nothing to stop the most densely populated areas because there is human interaction. People will marry, people will mate, people will conceive, people will have kids. And where there is less education, that will be in greater ratios. And so do we expend our resources to educate our kids, to send them to the finest private schools? Or do we spend our resources perhaps not to give our kid the finest school and yet use that money to educate people where there are dense populations? It's a matter of how much do I consume on me and mine when others do not have. And that's really the ethical and moral question. It's not do I not have kids, but what do I spend on the kids I have? And what do I spend on me in relation to my neighbor? And who then is my neighbor and to what degree?
I think one of the underlying assumptions that Tom is bringing up is one that I noticed quite readily at a church I used to attend when I was still single. In the town that I lived in, it was pretty much a bedroom community. A lot of couples, a lot of young families. People would commute down into the city to work. And so the church was kind of tailored toward families. And that is common in a lot of churches that I see, that most of the sermon illustrations, most of the events that go on in the church, social events, are kind of geared toward and around families. And as a single person in this church, I often felt left out. I often felt like half the time the sermon really had no application to me because most of it was about how to deal with a marital situation or how to raise your kids properly or, you know, those kinds of things. And to me, it just didn't matter because I didn't have kids and I wasn't married. But I noticed that there was such an emphasis on providing as much help and sustenance for families, on creating this ideal situation of the family. So the pressure was on as a single person that, well, if I really want to be an ideal person in this social context, I should be married and I should be having kids. And I was even told that much, that as a single person, I would really grow once I got into a relationship, that was kind of like the next step of my Christian growth. What I think you're bringing up, Tom, is that we have an underlying assumption within the church that having kids, having a family is the ideal situation for us. And I think you're calling attention to the fact that that is not necessarily the case as we see it in Scripture. And I think that's a good point. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to now maintain an antagonistic attitude towards people who want to have kids. But I think you are pointing out that there is this underlying idea that it is an automatic blessing of God to have children, to develop your own family. And what Adam is bringing up, I think, is very good, is that this can be twisted into just another expression of selfishness.
That's a fair summary of it, Chris. I'm reminded of C.S. Lewis's stance, and really our stance on so many issues as a society and as Christians, that an evil or an abuse is a corruption or an overexpression of a good. Too much morphine is illegal. Too much alcohol is immoral. The whole Corinthian problem of meats for the belly and the belly for meats, but God will destroy both it and them, and not to be brought under the power of anything. I think we need to examine both our consumerism and our urge to have children and families and fulfilling lives as goods. Yes, those are God-given desires. It's a God-given desire to eat too, but gluttony is strictly forbidden in Scripture. So the idea that because something is a gift from God and because it is a good, it of necessity needs to be accommodated and fulfilled and guarded as a right is, I think, questionable. And that it can turn into an evil because it becomes an expression of selfishness and of ill will toward one's neighbor as one competes with one's neighbor for one's own joys. Even sometimes pressing down one's spouse to say, you will give me children. It's my right. Well, the spouse is saying to each other, you will give me this because this is what I want. Quickly becomes an abusive situation. In any case, whether it's affection, whether it's pleasure, whether it's children, whether it's goods and services, you see, those are not Christian stances on any topic.
Forgive me, guys, if I've come off antagonistic in my approach to this topic, but I can't help but wonder how many people out there would God have a different choice for rather than marriage and children? How many people out there would God prefer to be single and give resources that would be spent on those other things to those that have none, like you were just bringing up, Adam? But they don't do that because that seems a little extreme. Hey, it's a good thing to get married and have a kid. He that finds a wife finds a good thing. He that has kids has a good thing. So I'll have a good thing here. Rather than, maybe I'm being called towards more of a Christ-like life of abstinence, of service, of going without for the sake of another. I don't hear a lot of people bringing that up as a possibility at all. I think there is a small amount of people that have a missionary perspective on things, going without, sacrificing for the kingdom and for kingdom work. I guess what we're challenging here in this discussion, and I think it definitely needs to be challenged, is this idea that as Americans we have the right to a wife and kids and a suburban and a nice job and a nice house. I want a house. And, you know, I think it's my right to have a house. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe God would have you move into a smaller apartment, where you and your wife and your kid are living in the same room, so that someone else may have medical care. But hey, I mean, that's extreme, so, or at least that would be called an extreme position.
In many ways, it brings us back to the basic Christian stance that we are pilgrims, that we are travelers and strangers. How many kids do you want to take with you backpacking? See? How many kids do you want to take into a war as warriors? As every soldier of Christ, as Paul said to Timothy, seeks not to entangle himself with the affairs of this world, that he might please he who called him to be a soldier. And we have this tension in the Christian life because we have never experienced a life outside of the one on this little ball of dirt. And so we live with the perspective of this world. And we say, you know, I want good things out of my life. And kids are a good thing and they're fulfilling. Families are a good thing and fulfilling. And we seek in many ways, there's an urge, an instinctive urge, a special urge to maintain the generations, you know, to continue. And the whole process of having kids is one that's focused upon continuance and permanence and maintenance of the species. So that is a basic competitive drive to transience, spirituality, and temporariness, you know. That one says, we're just passing through, it's not a big deal. The other one says, maintain, keep, and get the generations going. And we really have to negotiate these as Christians on a day-to-day basis. Why do we do any decision-making? And really to know that we're conflicted. We were stuck in Eden in the first place to be here on this planet for a long time, to have authority, to settle down, to tend this garden. Now we messed things up, death entered, and forevermore, we are conflicted between the two. And as Christians, we have to decide which will we live for. That which is most close against our spine, which we were first created for, which is to live here and tend this world, or to be renewed and made into a different person and go on. Because we can't ever get back to the garden. We can only get on to the New Jerusalem. And that means sometimes just leaving the memories and the urges of the garden behind. Saying, I will choose to live in a different way. Because that path is closed. It was closed with the angel and the flaming sword. And now we have to say, how do I live as a conflicted individual in faith and sacrifice and love? And forgetting those things which are behind, press forth to the things which are before and offer that as a sacrifice.
Well, that's all the time we have today for Interface. We'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen. Thanks to Chris Holowaty, Tom Dunn, and Adam Ayers for being here. Thanks to Chris Holowaty for engineering the program. Thanks to Random Outburst Studios for making Interface possible. And thanks to you for listening.